because we had some packets.
Yeah, just to bring us the speed.
We made a bunch of copies.
Oh, okay, good. Next week.
you want a new sport for somebody?
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. I'll let Tom introduce your guys.
You mean
Ezra? James, do you want to do it? Let's get rolling, folks. Bruce. Hey, I want you to have Bruce come up here. Blue Ribbon Committee's calls.
How you been, Mark?
Good, boy. Where'd you get the coffee? You got a regular coffee? You got a coffee back
there? Want me to get some?
Nah.
I'll have bread.
Yeah, come on up. Hey, somebody from or Rex and Larry for the Blue Ribbon Committee. Yeah, come on up. Grab a seat.
Who said anybody knew?
I think we're all set, Rex. Thanks.
How are we doing tonight, folks? Glad you're all here, and we do have some other people that are listening in on it. And kind of, again, an end-of-season wrap-up. There's some coffee in the back there and some cookies, I guess. It's always nice for the department to come out and talk about what happened with our fisheries management. It's a big, big issue for a lot of people out here. It's huge economic impacts for the Susitna River Valley, Northern District here, and a lot of interest in this. And hopefully this will be able to provide a little bit more information and a better understanding of what happened this year, a little bit in the past, and maybe what we can expect to see next year. With that, we'll just kind of get going. We've got some questions that we've kind of posted to the department earlier. You know, I'm always under the opinion that it's easier to have a discussion if we have something to talk about and everybody's prepared instead of shooting from the hip. Although, where anybody here can ask any questions that they want, so we get going. These were just some questions that are typically that we get asked as legislators and the same typical questions that we've been looking at year to year as management. So they're going to cover a little bit of these in their overview. We're going to get an overview from Sport Fish, overview from Comfish, Commercial Fishing Department, and then we'll go into some of these other questions there. But, you know, most importantly is allowing the public to ask these questions. You know, these are the people that work for us and manage our fishery stocks, and they're pretty dedicated folks, and they work pretty hard, and we maybe don't always agree, but they think they're doing their best, and you know, we kind of all have our own opinions on that, I guess. I know that they're all pretty good guys, and they're all very hard-working guys. I have a lot of discussions with every one of them, and I appreciate them all, and they're all professional in what they do. With that, James, Jim Hasbrook, you want to maybe introduce your staff?
Sure. My name's Jim Hasbrook. I'm the regional supervisor for Sport Fish South Central Region. Here in the white shirt is Tom Bonya. He's our management supervisor for Cook Inlet. And seated next to him is Sam Ivey. He's our area management biologist up here in the valley. And seated right behind him in the blue shirt is Jack Erickson. He's the regional research biologist for Sport Fish Division.
And also, I guess we got Representative Wes Keller, avid sport fisherman. I guess everybody sitting up here is really into this is in their life and what they do every day. And Senator Huggins, everybody knows Charlie, and Senator Linda Menard. And Larry Engel, again, and Bruce Knowles here with the Matsu Blue Ribbon Committee.
I should also mention that Lisa Evans, the Assistant Director for Sport Fish Division, is here with us as well. And in the back here is Ben Mulligan. Ben is the legislative liaison for the department.
Most folks remember Ben worked for Representative Bill Stoltz for years as a fish biologist and as a staffer there. So it's nice for us legislators to have Ben over on that side now, too, because the communications is just fabulous with the department.
He's going to have to work 6 months in Siberia to get back in the valley.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce. Let's start with a kind of just a rundown then.
Introduce the commercial fishing.
Oh, I thought we did.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
My name is Tracy Lingon, Region 2 Supervisor for Commercial Fisheries, and with me tonight is Pat Shields, who is Area Manager for Upper Cook Inlet.
Thanks, Tracy. Let's just do a little bit of while you're up there, Tracy, why don't you just go back and give us kind of a review on the Comfish and just an overview of what you've thought of this season.
Mr. Shields.
There we go. Delegating authority. We don't call it passing the buck.
Pat lived and breathed this thing and he's a much better person to articulate what happened this year than I.
I'll be as brief as possible. Just very quickly wrap up the season. Most of you know we came off of the board fish meeting before the season. There were a number of changes in what the board had passed for management of the commercial fishery, mostly to do with how we were to use the drift gillnet fishery. Anyway, we had a pretty good sockeye salmon forecast, which put us in the middle tier for the management of the sockeye run. That meant once the whole Eastside Senate fishery opened up, we had 51 hours per week used that fishery. We had in the middle tier, our minimum goal in the Kenai River was 1 million. So we started out the season as normal. Late June, the Kaspilov section opened a couple days early because we had a 50,000 fish statement. So it allowed us to open this season a couple days early there. Things actually got started kind of slow in both escapement and harvest on sockeye salmon Indian up until about the 14th of July. Our test fish program that tells us, gives us an indication of what's coming into the inlet for sockeye, it showed us that a large body of fish had moved into the inlet. On the 14th of July, the drifters went out and fished in, remember they were the that particular day, it was Area 1, or I think it was in Area 1, which is south, all of the water south of Calgon Island, south tip of Calgon Island, and they had a very good day of fishing. Their catch per boat was a record for the inlet. It was about 1,600 fish per boat. So it gave us an indication that there were a lot of sock in the inlet. 2 days later, those fish hit the beaches and hit the rivers, and we picked them up in a set net fishery 2 days later, and we started counting a lot of fish in escapement. Most of you remember we had a single-day escapement or passage event in the Kenai River, more than 200,000 fish. In fact, over the next 8-9 days, we put nearly 1 million sockeye salmon into the Kenai River in escapement. And so our challenge at the time then was to how to slow that sockeye salmon run down in light of the fact that we were having a below-average return of late-run king salmon to the Kenai River. And we were having indications in our test fishery and in the drift gillnet fishery that the coho salmon run didn't look good. It looked weak. So the challenge to the commercial fisheries management was, it's not a new challenge, is how do you slow down that sockeye run that's going into the Kenai and Kaspilov River, rivers, keep your exploitation as low as you can also on Kenai River king salmon and northern bound sockeye and coho stocks. And that's the mixed stock fishery challenge you're faced with in Cook Inlet. So what we did is we, in the commercial fisheries management, did something we've never done before, and that is we used the drift fleet when the set netters were closed. So we would keep the set netters closed during their window periods and didn't fish them during the night and tried to be as judicious as we could with the hours that we were allowed to fish. We never did use all the hours that were allowed in the management plans. And we fished the drifters in this new corridor where the board had given us a new area. They expanded the outside border of the corridor, and they called it an expanded corridor. Gave them another couple miles of water to fish in. And we used that pretty extensively. And there were four periods, as I said, during the year where we didn't fish set netters and did fish the drifters. And at the risk of repeating myself, I just do want to try to let you folks know the challenge that was in front of us, and that was you have one stock coming back that's, you know, very strong, and you have other stocks that were coming back that were below average or weak. And the way we chose to address that issue was to try to harvest as many sockeye salmon with the drifters as we could. We fished, I think there was a period of 14, 15 days straight where we fished the drifters mostly in that expanded corridor. And again, 4 days where we didn't fish set netters and did fish drifters. In the end, when you look at it from how successful were you, we met the goal in sockeye in the Kaspilov River. We exceeded our in-river goal in the Kenai. Fish Creek, you folks had a dinette fishery up here. Had that fishery not been implemented, we probably would have exceeded the goal there. But we were in the goal there, and the Fish Creek dinette fishery was implemented. Sam will speak to that. In the Susitna, the three lakes where we have goals, we exceeded the FCG at Chilatna, we were in the goal at Judd, and we were below the goal at Larson. So from a sockeye standpoint, that's fairly successful when you were faced with what we were faced with. I said I'd be quick. That's probably enough for the management. I'm sure there'll be a number of questions that will be asked about various management actions, but that's it from the commercial side.
So Pat, when you said you harvest as many sockeyes with the drift fleet as possible.
Yeah.
Because there's a massive salmon going on out there. How many other species do you pick up with that?
Well, they catch all five. They don't catch very many Chinook salmon, especially out in the middle. They do start to pick up a few more in the corridor, but they catch chum, pink, coho, and sockeye. Should state, a drifter, when he's setting his gear and he starts picking up chum salmon, pink salmon, and even coho salmon, they'll pick their gear up and move. They want to catch sockeye, but they catch all five species.
So do you keep track of that?
Yes.
Every
fish that's caught by a commercial fisherman, if they take it home or if they sell it, goes on a fish ticket.
So do we have did you present us with any of that information? What I'm trying to get at is some of the tributaries got pretty low escapement on some of these species, and, you know, that's affected by those commercial fishermen that are catching or intercepting those untargeted species.
The only stock that we can tell you to catch by drainage is for sockeye. And these guys will speak to it. We're beginning to develop baselines for Chinook salmon. We'd like to very soon be able to give you that catch by stock for Chinook salmon. We're not quite there yet, but sockeye is the only one we can tell you or estimate the catch by drainage through our genetics program.
We did bring copies of the season summary and sold this information that Pat's talking about, and the numbers and the harvest numbers that you're looking for are in that season summary. And there's copies in the back of the table, and if we run out, I've got some more.
Thanks, Tracy. And just because there's people listening in, I think we can just say our names when I've got something to say so people know what we're talking about. Larry or Bruce or Ricky, any other questions? Senator?
I have a question.
Ricky. Ricky Geese?
Ricky Geese, Kinder River Sport Fishing Associate. I thought the department did a really, really good job in a challenging environment where you had really a very large run of sockeye coming back to the Kenai River, which, of course, is kind of the bread and butter of the commercial fish division, and you had low returns of coho and king salmon through the year. And so I just want to say good use of the, you know, we were at the Board of Fisheries meeting. It was uncertain how the expanded corridor would work. It hadn't been used in a couple decades, and I think that from our perspective, we thought that the expanded corridor worked really well. I think if you look at the number of boat days that drift boats were actually out in the inlet in that expanded corridor, there are two things, the expanded corridor and decoupling of the drift fleet and the setnet fleet really worked well to focus harvest on Kenai and Katilaw sockeye, and so you didn't have to put the drift fleet as much in the middle of the inlet where you get more of the mixed harvest. And I think hopefully the department thinks that was a successful experiment this summer, but I think it really worked well. If you just look at the numbers, in the past you could have, there's 400 boats that go out on a regular opening on average. If you have a Monday and a Thursday opening, that's 800 boats. And then in the narrow corridor, you could fit about 100 boats in there. And usually they fish 3 days, so that'd be another 300 boats. You'd have about 1,100 boat days. This summer, when you look at it, they fished basically 7 days a week. And in that expanded corridor, if you look at the numbers, they fit anywhere from about, on average, about 300 boats. Now, in the regular openings, they fit 400 boats. So you just do the math on that. That's over 2,000 boat days. That's almost a doubling of the number of drift boats that were out there, boat days of boats that are out there. And I think it was a really significant thing this summer. I think it was a very good experiment, and I think it worked. And hopefully the department finds that a useful tool as they continue to move through management and cooking.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to expand on that comment.
Go ahead, Larry.
As most of the people in this room know, that expanded corridor concept that Ricky's been talking about and that the staff referred to using repeatedly this year, that idea came from, was authored by folks up here and with Ricky's group, Christian Hart and the Board of Fisheries. I guess I would ask the staff, looking back now on the season, do you feel that the expanded quarter, decoupling the drift fishery from the setland fishery, was beneficial from what you were used to when you couldn't do that? A much smaller quarter and decoupling. You referenced that you did it. We heard Ricky say he thought it worked well. I've got my opinion what I thought. I'd like to hear what he thinks or they think.
Yeah, it's a. I would say that there was some success in using the expanded corridor. It allowed drifters liked it. It allowed more water for them to fish in, and to allow separation of the boats. When you're in a narrow corridor, they're really close together, and there's a lot of competition for the water. And so we heard positive, things from drifters that they liked that expanded corridor. For me as a manager, sometimes I thought that it bordered on being an allocative decision that I was making, choosing which group was going to go out and fish that day. There was some, uncertainty about that aspect from me for a manager. But this was what the board had given us. The board gives us tools to use to try to bring these runs into the escaping goals that we have. And that was the tool, the new tool. And I would say it depends on who you talk to. Some of the set netters don't think it's a very good tool. They didn't.
That
like
wasn't
it.
The question. The
nope.
question was you.
It helped me keep the sockeye run in the Kenai River, a lower escapement than it would have been without that expanded corridor. Or I would have had to have gone out into the middle more. And everybody knows about the repercussions of that. You end up harvesting other stocks, which we're going to be addressing here tonight.
Thank you.
Fred.
Yep, and retrospective, if you took what you described that happened this year and you were going to redo the fishing program with the same data, what would you do different?
That's always. The way the run came into Cook Inlet this year, and I'm talking the sockeye run, it was fairly unique in that it was truncated. Our run came in, as I said, it started out real slow, the fish came and they hit, and then it was kind of over in about 10 days to 2 weeks. That's atypical for Cook Inlet. We're usually a little more spread out, usually a 3 to 4 week run rather than a 2 week run. And so what would we do different? I really haven't thought a whole lot about that because of the way things came in. They came in, bang, we had all these fish in escapement. We had, what I'd do different is I'd have more king salmon come back. And it wouldn't have put us in the situation where we were, to where you could have tried to fish some of the beaches to help with the situation too, but it wasn't. I'm not saying that we did a perfect job, but I don't have any glaring things on my mind that it would have done differently. It was a challenge. It was my first year as the manager. We had new work plans. First year with an expanded corridor. First year where we separated gear types. It was a very challenging and unique season.
Yeah. From a commercial fishing standpoint, you mentioned the escape of the Kings. As you know, this year Beluga was closed.
Correct.
Lewis was closed to all fishing. Eudora was closed to all fishing.
Yeah.
Chewetno was, and I don't remember the restrictions
closed.
On Chewetno.
It was closed.
Alexander, we know that. So when you start checking the drainages, more drainages are closed than open. And to me, if that's not a wake-up call, I'm not sure what is. So, just specifically with King, because, that is the money fish for those people that hook in line. What are your thoughts from a commercial fishing standpoint? And before you answer that, I would like somebody from commercial fishing to address bycatch without saying that it's on the back table, so we really do know what the bycatch was. If you could just kind of correlate that to the other species.
I'll have other staff stand up and also help address this question. The board addressed it at the meeting in February and made these stocks of concern. And therefore, a management plan or an action plan is passed to identify what actions the department is going to take to reduce the harvest of these stocks. And I'll speak to the commercial side
they took the early king salmon commercial fishery, and they closed the west side for the whole season from the wood chip dock, which is south of Tioning a few miles, all the way to the Susitna River. And that's the most productive waters for king salmon commercial fishing, and they closed it for the year. And it remains closed during this three-year interim until the next board meeting.
What was this southwesterly boundary?
It's called the Wood Chip Dock, which is a couple miles south of the village of Tioning. And again, that was a very poignant issue at the board meeting, and it was discussed at length when this action plan was developed, and those were the waters that were deemed to afford the most protection to those stocks that came under the stock of concern status.
Right. So if you went south of the wood chip dock, what sort of king activity, how would you describe that?
Yeah, that's mostly trading bays from there down to the southern end of the northern district. I could look up here and see what our harvests were there. They you know, those waters remained open for their four periods that they had this last year.
Because, I mean, the drainage that comes to mind down there, which also has its problems in the MacArthur River, has a huge problem. And it's not because they're overfishing, because it's kind of way out there, but when people get there. It's symptomatic of, in my estimation, an area that's relatively isolated, but there aren't any kings that are showing up there. It's a significant drainage, or has been historically. Thoughts on MacArthur River?
Yeah, I'd like to have one of the four guys. I don't know the data they have for Sam Hess on there. But I will tell you that this, again, the board addressed these stocks at their meeting. I'm not telling you that they addressed every single stock in the end, but these were the stocks that they identified, other than the MacArthur, is having issues, and they said this is what you will do with the commercial fishery to address conservation for those stocks. But Sam can speak to MacArthur. I have to admit I don't know the numbers for that really.
Mm-hmm. We don't do the escapement surveys on MacArthur in particular. The West Cook Kennet streams are indexed annually by year around the Chewedna, Theodore, and Lewis rivers, and then on occasion, when we can have the water conditions, we'll count the Coal Creek system on the Beluga as well.
Yeah, but if you get back to my point, it's not about how many fish went to MacArthur. I can tell you, I fish over there, not many. All right, mm-hmm. So that's a survey of one. The question is commercial fishing activity that impacts areas like MacArthur. And I'm not trying to paint commercial fishing as bad. That's one of the variables that we have to look at, all the drainages, because obviously the wood chip dock takes care of the drainage further in our direction, but to the south, there's still some significant fisheries that are present.
Now, the estimated harvest from the four periods in the west side of Northern District this year, so that would put the area you're talking about, Trading Bay, was 1,800.
I guess Pat, be the one to ask. Struck me when you talked about trying to get as many fish as you could, and you got the fleets out and targeting those sockeye, which is good, I guess. But when I look at the escapement in some of these tributaries, some of the main tributaries that get fished around here, Little Susitna River Chinook salmon, 887. The lowest ever recorded, except for 1984. Look at the Deschke River for coho, 7,500, lowest ever recorded. You know, something happened there where these fish aren't getting to these tributaries. And I guess maybe the question would be to ask Hasbrook, what do you think about the commercial fisheries? Did it work right? I mean, it's your job to manage the sport fisheries after they're there. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to. What happened to these fish? Did they get intercepted? Because, you know, in this big mass of sockeye that came in, if we were to look at the number of other species that were caught with those sockeye that maybe could have went into these tributaries that didn't get there, where are those fish at? Did they just not show up?
No, for coho salmon, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was a good run. It was not.
And we had mixed, Sam's got the data, you have mixed results up north with Little Sioux having a very poor weak coho salmon run. And from the commercial standpoint, we had our second smallest coho salmon harvest ever. The thrift fleet caught 37,000 coho for the entire year. Now you spread those out amongst all of the drainages that coho salmon go into. I can't identify that harvest of the 37,000 by stock. I can't tell you how many of those were Little Susitna, how many were in all the drainages in the Susitna drainage. But I can tell you that's the second smallest harvest we've ever had, and we fished the drifters pretty aggressively, as we've just alluded to, for sockeye, especially in this new expanded corridor. It was not a strong return of coho salmon, especially the Little Sioux. Am I sitting here telling you that that commercial fishermen don't harvest coho? No, they do. I can give you the numbers. I just can't tell you what stock each of those go to. I can tell you, though, that that was a very, very small harvest by the commercial fleet.
Andy, any help?
You know, certainly I'm kind of more concerned. You know, I thought the department did a pretty good job for the most part this year. But I certainly was concerned with the northern district. And there's kind of some confusion as to what the department is managing for, which escapements they're managing for. But I read directly from Point B in the northern district salmon management plan. The department shall manage the northern district commercial salmon fisheries based on the abundance of Yetna River sockeye salmon, the Yetna River escapement bowl, or other salmon abundance indices. So I guess the question that I would have on a commercial side, what escapement goal is the department managing for, and how are you accounting for them in season, so if you're going to make the goals for them?
It's not just a commercial goal. We have an escapement goal for coho on the Little Susitna River. We have an escapement goal for coho salmon for Fish Creek, Tummy, and one for McRoberts Creek. The board has addressed somewhat coho conservation in the management plans that they've laid out on when and where I can fish, especially drift fishermen. They have taken the month of July and they've divided it up into time periods, and they've said during this one time period of July 9th to July 15th, you can only fish your drifters in specific areas of the inlet on specific days, and that's primarily for sockeye salmon conservation for stocks headed north. Has some impact on coho. From July 16th to July 31st, the board has addressed coho conservation of northernbound stocks, again, limiting where I can fish and when I can fish drifters. So you take a run like this run in 2011, for example, on sockeye. Had there not been coho salmon indications in the commercial fishery and in my test net fishery, that the run was weak, it was, you know, I could look and see the catches were much lower than average. Had that not occurred, I would have sought permission from staff to use drifters more aggressively out in the middle. I had a big sockeye run. I had problems on the east side with kings. I would have liked to harvest more sockeye with the drifters out in the middle of the inlet. Looked at the coho, and we're in that dilemma again. How do you manage all of these? And not having real strong indicators in season for coho to say, are we going to make the Susitna goal a month from now? You know, I don't have that level of data yet to be able to look and say, all right, that number indicates we're going to make the goal, and this number indicates we're not. You know, much of the conservation for coho salmon is written into the plans. You know, you'll fish your drifters in the water, these waters on this day. That is to protect coho salmon headed north. It's to protect sockeye salmon headed north. I wish that I had a magic crystal ball that could tell me, based on what happened this day, you're not going to make a goal. You need some additional conservation measures. We don't have that level of knowledge about it yet. But so what we do is we abide by the plans the board has provided. And knowing that most years they afford enough protection and conservation for these stocks to make their goals.
Pat, we hear year after year we're going by what the board tells us we have to do. Yeah, I mean that's what we hear every year. It's, I don't know. When we're looking at these, you know, are you managing for abundance as a commercial fisherman, as manager there? are you trying to just get as many commercial fish caught as you can, or are you looking at escapement there? You know, I mean, if we don't have spawners, or sport con, it doesn't matter, and we're not getting spawners. How do you look at that when you're looking at your management?
That's our number one directive as managers, is to attempt to achieve escapement goals that provide for the highest yields possible. And we don't have an escapement goal for every stock. But we have escapement goals for many stocks, and we haven't
been meeting those escapement goals, I guess. So I guess it's always frustrated me, and I think I speak for others here that if we haven't been meeting those escapement goals, yet you're trying to manage for abundance to keep that commercial fleet viable at the same time. It puts you in a difficult position, I know.
That's why every 3 years when we meet, we address stocks. We look at where we've been in escapement on specific stocks. If we've been failing to meet those goals, we address that through conservation measures, through stocks of concern status. And the department, believe you me, we spend a lot of time looking at that and evaluating that. Coho salmon right now, Little Sioux Coho, are one of the ones that we'll be looking at very closely for the next sport cycle. And if we don't meet goals for another, if the goals aren't met, we'll address that at the next board meeting, and conservation measures will be enacted to both commercial and sport fisheries. It is our primary objective, to meet goals.
Andy, then Bruce.
Okay. I just kind of follow up a little bit. You know, when I asked about what goals you're using up here,
mm-hmm.
I heard you mention 3 coho goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the department said in the past that the weir's so far up on the sockeye that they didn't think they had in season information. And maybe that's what you're saying. I didn't hear you mention the sockeye thing. So then on those 3 goals, one of them that has a sport fishery that amounts to 24 hours a week and a very small area open fishing, went over the goal. And then the other two missed the goal. And on Little Susitna River, if you're managing for, if those are the 3 goals you're managing for, and Little Susitna River, by the 6th of August, the sport fish manager is looking at the same data you have and saying, we cannot open the river to bait, or we're going to harvest too many fish. And then at the end of August, the sport fish manager says, we've got to close the fishery because we're not going to make the goal. And, I mean, isn't it the same data? And if you're managing, if the primary objective is managing goals, those are the only goals you have, and you're looking at your commercial stuff and saying, even if we close it, you wouldn't have enough fish. Isn't it time to do something? I have a hard time seeing why at least something somewhere, an area closure or something, wasn't done.
I understand that question, and I understand the angst that people would have now. I'll do my best to address that. Again, the board has said to conserve coho salmon. This is how you will fish your fishery. The Northern District, it's for sockeye and coho. There's a period of a couple of weeks where they only get one net per permit. On big coho runs, I can't give extra periods to commercial fishermen to harvest large coho runs. The board has addressed conservation and under the understanding that in most years it's going to provide for the escapement goals. The question you're asking, by the time the coho salmon sport fishery was closed, our commercial catches by then were minuscule. I mean, we caught 9 fish after the time the fishery was closed. On the west side of the Northern District in the commercial fishery after the closure. Prior to the closure, no. We caught, when went to no bait, the restriction, there were some coho harvested in the Northern District set net fishery. Not saying that there weren't. But again, the conservation of these stocks are addressed in the plans as to when I can fish. In the Northern District, I don't get any extra periods. I can't go out and say, oh, coho look really strong, I'm going to fish addition with the fisher. I can't do that. Just one of those ones in hindsight, you go, could have it been done differently when you ask that. There's a possibility that we could have, considered some restrictions to the fishery. Some additional beyond what's in the management plans. You can always look at those, and again, the conservation gets spread out over numerous stocks.
I got a question on that. Is the escapement goal just a set number, or do you have a range?
It's a range.
Okay, do you always shoot for the minimum? I mean, what do you manage for?
Well, yeah, every stock is differently, and this we manage to be in that range somewhere.
Okay, and then the other, I think I heard you say that you don't have escapement goals for some species.
Yep.
What do you need? What else do you need before you can start doing that? I mean, it seems to me pretty hard to manage if you can't set an escapement.
Yeah, well, you need always, I mean, it's an answer we always give. You would need money, time, and resources for these other stocks, and you would need that to be a mandate that we think we have problems with these other stocks.
More studies, more samples, more...
Yeah, we're talking about pink salmon, chum salmon.
Yeah, coho.
The two that we don't have. We have one goal on chum salmon. It's down in the southern part of the Cook Inlet, and we don't have any escaping goals for pink salmon, primarily because we haven't perceived there to be significant problems with either of those stocks. And commercial fishermen catch them, but they try to stay away from them. They're not a target species. They're out there to try to catch sockeye.
Bruce Knowles?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you on getting the fish wheels operating right up here. I understand that you educated people on how to do fish wheels.
No, I can't take credit for that one. Must be.
Well, I got other reports I want to thank you. One of the things that we have been doing to go along with all of this, we've had a study for coho and chum salmon going for 2 years, and next summer I believe will be the third year and the final year. When are we going to go in and start the saltwater portion of that study so that we will have the data that we need to manage these other two species? And going on with the coho in the northern districts, when you allowed the expansion, that's two questions. When you allowed the expansion of net in the northern district, we already restricted sport fishermen, we being in the state of Alaska. Wouldn't it have been right or fair or whatever you want to say, to say, well, we got problems, they're not letting it for sport fishermen, fish bait and all, well, you can't reduce your nets. The department has that authority. Is there a reason that that wasn't done?
The department has, in our emergency order authority, we have for commercial, I have time and area.
Mm-hmm.
And in a limited scope, the board has given me authority over gear in a very limited scope. Now, I can follow those management plans, and we do so for in the Northern District
mm-hmm.
for sockeye salmon conservation. They've said from the 21st of July through August 6th, you'll only give them one of their three nets per permit.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm not following your question.
You should.
Entirely.
It would have still been proper for you to say, we're not going to go to that back to the three nets. We're going to stay with one net. That would have let additional fish through. And to me, that is a department, that is an answer that should have been done or asked and done without anybody talking about it. Because here we are, we're shutting people off up here. And yet the commercial fishermen are being able to go out and fish the way they have traditionally. You have been required to do that under the King Management Plan. Do we need to do that for the coho?
I guess that's up to you. If you have that prerogative through the board
well,
process.
No, what I'm saying is, if you don't have the authority to do it on your
yeah.
own, then do we have to ask the board to give you the authority?
For additional gear, if you want gear restricted beyond that time frame I just said to you, yes, I would have to have that authority from the board.
I think we'll maybe get some clearing up of that here with some further questions. Tracy is a director. Do you want to address that?
Not the director, please.
Okay. Is Pat boss?
This is Tracy.
Yes.
And Bruce, we understand the concerns, and like Pat said, this year was a very learning year. We went through a year with new management plans, new fishing area, new time. And I think we're going to be doing what essentially you are, I'm not going to say what you're asking for, but we're certainly going to be taking a look at it this winter and discussing with sport fish. I mean, some of these projects are just now not that far coming out of the water. And we'll look at it this year and certainly take everything in consideration. I mean, it was it was just like Pat said, it was a challenging year, to say the least.
Andy, that's...
I don't
even remember your name. Go ahead.
My name is Greg Acord.
Greg.
I was just curious, at what point in the COBO season this year did you have the information that the COBO runs were going to be low? I know Sam had them early. The test fisheries were early. In July, mid-July, does everybody have the same information that we're looking at a bust year? I mean, that's what it was looking like. To everybody that fishes in the valley, we had an indication as fishermen that it was going to be a bust year on COBO. You guys had the same information, right? You had real numbers, real information. At that point, do you guys work together? You guys are communicating every day saying, this is the numbers we're going to have. And Sam's saying, you know what, I'm going to have to shift the Little Sioux Sitting down to bait on the 6th and maybe looking at further closures. At that point, when Andy asked his question, you talked about you didn't have the authority to give the commercial fishermen more fishing time to kill an abundance of fish. But the people in this room, we're not concerned about abundances this time. We want to, in the future, have some way for you to have the authority to stop the fish and saying the board says I have to let this much, this many nets in this area fish. If it happens next year, maybe we got to stop the fishing completely and not worry about the length of a net. And maybe, even if we would have done that this year, we would not have made escapement rules. There was a point this year where everybody could have stopped. And the 37,000 that the drift fleet got, that was too little too late. But the later fishing could have been, we could have let more fish into the system. And potentially we're going to have the same thing next year. But that's just for COBO. The same goes for king salmon. You have the information. The information is available. Why is it continuing to go? You have the authority, or somebody should have the authority, to let these fish get through instead of worrying about how many nets we're going to fish on years of abundance. We don't have the abundance.
Tom Vanya, you got an answer for that?
Yeah, let me try to give a stab at it. You know, to be fair, and we were faced with new management plans by the board. We did it with king salmon for the Susitna River as well. The board made some major changes to deal with stocks of concern and to move fish north. We have to let those plans play out for at least one summer to see the effect of them. You have to do it. That's what we did with the Susitna drainage. We saw what they did. We expected the harvest to be reduced of king salmon by about 50%. Okay, this is what we're going to live with. We're going to go in there because why? We don't have in-season tools, really, to be able to be effective at our management for king salmon in the Susitna. Same with the commercial fleet in dealing with coho salmon. The board set this up. Let's see what this is going to do. I mean, let's be fair about that. That's what's going to happen. And also be fair, the primary harvesters of coho salmon are sport fishers. The primary responsibility to put coho salmon into the spawning beds is going to fall upon Division of Sport Fish to deal with the major. I said primary. I didn't say exclusive. Okay? They're the primary users. We're the ones that have the information to be effective when they're in the streams. You're out there in the ocean. I mean, that's difficult. They are primarily managing for sockeye. The board said, this is what we're going to do to move fish north. Is it going to work or not? You know, we don't know until it all folds out. Does that mean we're going to do everything the same the next year? Maybe, maybe not. We haven't had those discussions yet. But to be fair, sport fishing still was occurring in the Northern District as well. There were certain streams that were restricted and closed, but there were a lot of streams that were still open. And there was still opportunity for sport fishermen to go out there. The commercial fishermen, I mean, you're asking them to close completely when they are harvesting fish that are bound for all of the streams, all of the area. So, I mean, these are some of the things that when you're asking some of these pointed questions, you know, it's difficult to try to give you the answer that maybe you're looking for because there's a lot that goes on to this. And are we going to be doing the same stuff next year? Maybe, maybe not. We haven't had those discussions yet.
Well, I understand.
You asked the question, where do the fish go? We ask that question ourselves all the time. You have fairly good escapements. You would expect to have normal production. But when we're talking about king salmon, you have problems with king salmon statewide. It's not a good time for kings. We're not seeing it being a result, direct result of high catches or even average catches that are going on out in commercial fisheries all over the place, trawl fleets, everything. They're catching less kings, too. It's not a good time to be a king. It's not a good time to live as a king. The conditions aren't right for Alaskan stocks. And so during poor production, what do? All we can really do is try to reduce harvest. And all your harvest across the board for king salmon is sport and commercials are down. I mean, that's as managers, that's really all we can do until conditions change and production picks back up to average or good. We've seen it before, and it's likely we're going to see it again.
Howard Delo.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Yeah, my name's Howard Delo. Actually, my question kind of revolves around everything that you guys have just been talking about. And I think it has a lot to do with maybe divisional management philosophy versus public perception. We've heard discussions about how the board established or made major changes in the sport fish regulations this past year for king salmon in the rivers. Okay? And those were implemented, yet in some cases the sport fish division managers felt the need to impose further restrictions beyond what the board dictated. Same with coho, maybe more so coho than king salmon this past year. So the public perception of the sport fish division is they are willing to exercise management discretion beyond the framework the board has told them they want the fisheries managed in. What I've heard repeatedly from the commercial fisheries division is that the board has established a management plan. The conservation concerns are built into the plan. We will follow the plan. And there doesn't, public perception again, there doesn't appear to be the perception that the commercial fisheries division is as willing, at least, to exercise discretion in further restriction if it's deemed necessary based on all the various indices. It's, well, this is what the management plan says, this is what we're going to go with. I guess my question, is that a legitimate perception of how the management is being done? And if it isn't, could we get maybe a little better explanation of the philosophical management approach in quick and dirty terms from each division?
Tracy?
Yeah, this is Tracy. And Anna, thank you. Nard, I guess I would like to address your question because it was clear from past presentation of the drift fleet this season, that's not the case. We had the opportunity and could have gone and fished for sockeye salmon in the drift fleet in the entire district, but we didn't do that. Like Pat stated, in most cases, we kept them to the corridor, to the expanded corridor, and sometimes I think once, maybe twice, we went to Area 1.
One addition.
One time we went to Area 1. We didn't have to do that. I mean, we could have gone out there, fished the entire district, but we didn't. I mean, we held ourselves in check, and like Tom just stated too, it is a new set of plans. So it's very difficult for us to view a new set of plans in management, go out there and say, and try to predict what's going to happen. And I, you know, like you said, we've been through one year, and I explained to Mr. Knowles that we'll be looking at all this information this year. It is we're in a new realm here right now since February.
I take a shot at that just real briefly. The board meeting, the board addressed the stocks of concern on King Salmon. One of the pieces of data that we presented to the board was the commercial fishery, the Northern District commercial fishery in early Kings, is a 1-3% harvester of the entire King Salmon run in the Northern District. So you're talking about I'm not telling you again, we don't harvest Kings, we do, but you're talking about a very minor harvester. And so the board says we need to try to reduce your harvest, even though you're a small harvester, and I think 50% is what we were shooting for, and they closed the area that I spoke to and took away what they would think would be about 50% of the 1-3% harvester of the entire run of King Salmon there. And there are things the board has to follow with stocks of concern about trying to, reduce harvest in proportion to those people that harvest them. And that's how they chose to make those conservation measures, goals, in the commercial fishery. Does that mean we completely ignore and wouldn't institute additional restrictions? No. We try our best, as I said, we'll take a look and see how what we did this year, how it worked. You have kind of a mixed bag. We didn't make the single aerial survey goals, but we made the DESHCA goal. So there was some conservation. There were some savings.
And let's be clear when you say we're making goals or not making goals. We made the DESHCA and stuff. I mean, we're barely making some of these. So, it's at minimum plus best. You got another question, but I had a question to you. When you were on the board, Howard, just recently as a member of the board, I thought that we worked specifically, or the board did, to allow the department to go outside the management plan if they felt it. And didn't that expressly say or say again, department, you have the right, the authority to go outside the board, the management plan, if that's what you feel you need to do. Didn't they kind of address that issue directly to the
department? Yeah, the board actually mandated to the department that the department had the authority to step out of management plans to make escapement goals, and the intent of the board was to do that in years not only of high escapement when they may need to fish more than what the management plan allows, but also in weak run years when they might have to restrict or even close down fisheries. It was the two-edged sword, but the mandate was the number one priority was to make as many management or escapement goals as possible, realizing that they can't make every one. That's impossible. But to make as many as possible, and that's what the board debated, that's what the board passed, and as far as the intent on both the high end and low end, there was some discussion afterwards about whether that in fact applied on the low end. And I polled the other board members at the time, asking them what their intent was, and every one of them to a person said it was to be not only for high range but low range, that the department should manage to make the escapement goals as best as they can, yes.
So, again, we continue to hear about how we have to work within the management plan, yet these people who are managing it have the full authority from the board to do what they think is best to make sure that they get spawners in those creeks. I think that was a yes. Andy?
I think the problem that you're having, Pat, is that Andy Couch talking about, we have a management plan, and as Tracy acknowledged, and as we up here in the Northern District see, in the Central District, you have a management plan that lays down regulations. You're not allowed to fish above a certain level, just like in the Northern District. In the Northern District, Lake Coho, you're not allowed to have more than two periods. Just like we have some guidelines you can't go beyond unless you start busting. In this case, the plan says, in the Northern District, says you can't for Coho. If you're going high on escapement for Coho, you can't allocate more to the commercial fishery. But in the Central District, even though you have those management plans, what it seems like you're saying and what we're hearing is, you go outside when you start running low. You cut things off, and we see you doing that. Mm-hmm. But we don't understand why in the Northern District with King Salmon, when you see, you can say all you want about it, I can't see it coming ahead of time, but when the Little Susitna River is closed to King Salmon fishing, those fish have already gone through the commercial fishery, or they haven't gone through it. And the indication in stream was, you've got to close the entire fishery for half of the season. You still have commercial fishing going right up within yards of the Little Susitna River. You know, the closer you get to that river, it's just classic management. That's where you harvest more of those fish. In the case of coho, your indications were, we're not going to make it. And it just seems like if you follow the same rationale you use in the Central District, yes, we have a management plan. Now we're going out, we're not going to make the goal. We should cut it off. And that thing you were talking about, I'll read that. It's in the Upper Cook Inlet Salmon Management Plan. Notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter, it is the intent of the board that while in most circumstances the department will adhere to management plans in this chapter, no provision within a specific management plan is intended to limit the commissioner's use of emergency order authority to achieve established escape goals for the management plans as the primary management objective. We read that and think, of course you can go outside the management plans before this.
Let me attempt to address one thing, a couple things. One is regarding coho salmon. I don't have a tool in season that, again, I'll restate, that will tell me that based upon what I'm seeing in the test fishery or in my drift fishery, I am or I am not going to make a goal later on. I don't have that level, and I don't have the level of reaction that we have with the sockeye salmon fishery. Let me explain. We count the sockeye salmon escapement fairly soon after an action that we take with the fishery. So we can kind of slow down the escapement and speed up the escapement much closer to real time. You're talking Little Susitna Weir for my commercial fishery. You're talking a month. I could take an action and not measure it for a month. So what the board has done is said, we're going to make management plans. And we keep speaking to that because that's what we have to abide by, that says we're going to conserve fish this way. And many of those assessments are postseason. I didn't know that the single aerial survey king goals weren't met until postseason. But the board has said, here's how you're going to conserve fish bound for those systems. And what I hear sometimes people saying, well, you needed to do it more. Well, I can agree sometimes you should have done more, but I don't know that in season. The board says, take these actions, then we're going to address that. As Tom just spoke to, in 3 years from now, we're going to look at the actions we took and the results from those actions. And the board will come along and they'll say, you need to take more action. You need to be more conservative, or you could be less conservative now. In the sockeye fishery, it's a little different in the Central District. I have measurement tools that are much closer to the fishery, and they're long standing, because the sockeye salmon fishery is so important economically down there, and it's been the one that they've harvested for years. We have some measurement tools in season that give us a little bit more clear crystal ball as to what's going on. Had I known in the middle of the season I had a tool that told me you're only going to make 4,000 coho in the Little Sioux, would we have done something to try to protect just Little Sioux coho? You know, it's kind of hard than I would have put more sockeye in Chilatna. And I already went over the goal there. I would have put more in Kenai. It is a challenge. If I had a tool that I, folks, if I could go out there and say, don't fish drifters on this day in this area, and you're going to save Little Sioux coho, I'm all over.
You know, just kind of on that point, but we've talked a lot, we've heard a lot about tools, and I do want to allow a little bit of time for sport fish guys here,
yeah,
too. But we about the lack of tools, along with we don't have the tools to get the data we need. Heard that from you. Tom, we don't have in-season tools. Well, the department essentially eliminated most in-season management tools that you had. We had some Bendix, then we went to Ditson. We did some, we put $1 million, and it wasn't because the department asked for it so much that legislators, these people sitting right here at this table in your Valley delegation, worked hard to get $1 million to get some fish wheels set up and to catch fish, put some tags on them, and electronic sensors to count those fishes and weirs. And it didn't really come from the department asking for those tools, but we demanded that we find out more information. And you guys have eliminated a lot of those tools. I mean, you've taken away your basic in-season management. We've got the weir on the Little Sioux moved up at mile 71. I mean, that's so far upriver that it's just not useful. You know, and so I keep asking you folks, what if you had a commercial case? What if a drifter pulls in a net, a set, takes the scales off a half a dozen fish, puts them in a baggie and marks their location and date? You know, we've heard other testimony that your biologists now, through the DNA testing that we've helped fund, that they can get within 10 or 20 miles of where they think that fish is going to be headed through the DNA testing. You just talked about targeting Little Sioux Cove. You know, if you were to get some of that test sampling on specific dates in different corridors throughout the inlet, where those fish are at, that can start giving you some of that data. And when I've asked the department, would that be useful to you? I've always heard, nah, we don't need to do that. But yet we continue to hear, we need more data. You have a legislative delegation here that's trying to get you some tools that you need. And when you continue to ask for them, we almost have to push them at you. You know, when we got this is where in the last year, the capture, recapture, tagging program, and when I asked the department, do we need to refund this? It was a three-year program going through here. The first year was kind of figuring out what you're doing. This year, you finally, you know, got a real good indication of how you're doing it, better ways to catch fish, more fish, better sampling. Yet, we have not yet seen a request from the department coming to us saying, this is 3 years. That's not even the life cycle of these fish. I mean, if you were to look at a scientific data, and as you as biologists was to try and bring us to somebody as credible information, they'd say, this isn't credible. It's just such a three-year little snapshot. You need 6, 7, 8, 10 years of information to get the information you need. But we're not even getting requests from the department. And I'll bet you that this Valley delegation, Stoltz and Gatto included, and Charlie, would work their tail off to make sure that you've got the tools that you have to have. But we still fail to get those requests. You know, we're trying to give you the help that you need, and it really frustrates me, and I think I speak for the rest of our delegation, when I have to say this, and everybody in this room. We go through this year after year. You know, what can we do to make it so that you know what you're doing? We've been studying fishing this here for 51 years now. And we continually hear, well, we don't know how to manage it. Well, you know, we're having trouble. I know that we're not meeting escapement goals, and if we don't have spawners, I don't care where you're at, our fisheries are going to die. I don't know. I guess maybe I kind of went on a little long there. But Bruce, then we'll kind of maybe let some of the sport fishery go.
Yeah, Bruce Knowles. My question is, why doesn't the Conflict Division come up with a pre-season plan based on the previous years where we have losses and low returns and everything else? When we have a state law that says you will protect weak stocks, we know what the weak stocks are from the year before. We have a sustainable salmon policy that says burden conservation. We have already been told by sport fish division, the sport fishermen are going to be restricted this coming year for our king salmon fishing and whatever else they decide they're going to need to restrict us on. But I have yet to see a preseason plan sharing burden of conservation or protection of weak stock coming out of the conflict division. And that can go to your boss, because I know that's far beyond you. I mean, you may want something like that, but you're not being given the opportunity to develop it.
At the risk, I don't mean to sound rude, I guess I would disagree with that in that we have conservation measures and management plans for stocks that have been identified as stocks of concern. And there are significant restrictions to commercial fisheries to conserve those stocks. We have closures of the king salmon fishery. We have multiple restrictions to drift and set netters for sockeye salmon conservation. Two plans on two stocks to conserve in the commercial fishery those stocks. Is it enough in everybody's mind? Perhaps not. Is it too much in other people's minds? Perhaps so. But I have to abide, that is established by the board. and they tell me this is how you're going to conserve in your fishery these stocks. Now you're bringing up a third one in Coho, and that's something we'll be looking at. The department will be looking at this over this winter. We'll be looking at actions, be looking and continuing to monitor Coho salmon very closely.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you on your point. My point is that we had 12 out of 17 streams that missed the king salmon. We have six stocks of concerns. Those streams still miss their escapement goals for kings. There has been nothing that we have heard of, and we have asked, I know two or three times, what is the Tom Fish Division going to do about it? We have yet to get any sort of an answer. And now we've got cohos that are coming up on stocks of concern. And do we have to wait two more years for the next board before we get any kind of answers? That doesn't make sense.
Bruce, we're a 1-3% harvester of king salmon in the Northern District, the commercial fishery. We've closed half of the productive waters of that fishery. About the only other action you could take would be to completely close all of the commercial fishery. They're not going to make, I bet you if you close the entire commercial fishery, you're not going to make those goals you just spoke of. We're in a period of weak king salmon production. The board has said this is how you're going to conserve king salmon with the minor fishery. We're the 1-3% harvester of the total run. They said close half of your productive waters, and we've done that. I don't want to make it sound like I'm being rude. I'm following the board's directives, and we took some pretty significant actions. Those are the most productive waters in the Northern District for the commercial fishery, and they closed them. They're not restricted. They're closed. And we will continue to monitor that. If we come up at the next board meeting and we're still not making these goals, I'm sure that there will be more actions taken. There will be more closures or more conservative measures for conservation. I understand. Does it make me happy we're not making goals there? No.
Mark.
But we are. I just would disagree that we're not doing anything with the commercial fishery.
Larry?
Well, before we go much further on here, I think we've pretty much hashed over all the stuff about the Coho issues and the problems and the complexity of the fishery and how the department's authority interacts with the board thing. I think the real issue for all the people in this room that live in this area is that our stocks in this area, yes, the kings are sick in a lot of places in Alaska. We're seeing a downturn in Coho. That may be short-term or long-term, but the most productive sport fishery is the Little Sioux, probably the second largest in the state, and it's about ready to go into a stock of concern. So that's part of the frustration. And you've explained your position on that. But again, summarizing all of our positions, what we need to have done, and I'm summarizing partly for the legislators too, is that we've got these problems. We've got the sockeye stock of concern up here. The only stock of concern, all at Cook Inlet, is up here. We've seen the primary tool that you say you use when you have them, in season, sonar, and that's why you can do this. We've lost that up here. And legislators have invested a lot of money to try to give you the tools to get that back. And, of course, one of the questions along the line is, how close are we getting to that at some point, part of the meeting? But anyhow, we've got those stock concerns. On top of that, the real money fish, if you will, is our king salmon, and we've seen, you know, what the board did last year after a lot of debate and so on and so forth. They declared six of these streams a stock of concern. And for your information, a stock of concern is something that very lightly is given to stocks around the state. You can count them on your fingers and toes practically. There isn't very many. We got more here than any other geographical area, even close. Maybe that's because we got more data and recognize we're going to do a problem. But nonetheless, the king salmon have been something. Some of these streams, like the Theodore and the Lewis and some of those, have been going downhill. And certainly, these are concerns for all of us. But the board put in a plan. They fought and referred to the 50%, so on and so forth, to try to turn this issue around, sick king salmon. What happened? You're going to hear the sport fish staff get up here and tell you that it was another disaster this year. We're in the hole even worse than we were before. Just one more year of some of these systems haven't made the escape, minimum escapements in, you know, 5-6 years. some of them more than that. And so, I mean, this is a frustration the public has got, that we sit at the Blue Ribbon Committee here on a regular basis, and we're using this as a chance to let you hear it, the commercial fish staff, which we don't hear, and certainly recognizing your limitations too, but this is the frustration that we live in this area. So our king salmon are, you know, which is just the six stocks that are on stock of concern. We've got other ones right now that if the board went into session, we'd probably declare them. And if we continue to do this, so are we going to have to wait on king salmon for another 2 years of worsening conditions, hopefully better, but if they're not, to get outside the Board of Fish just shot at doing this the last time? Or are we going to try to do something on our own to correct it? And this is not just a question to the commercial guys. The sport guys have sat there fairly quiet. And we had a meeting, you know, 10 days ago. Those are very candid meeting, good discussion. And they're looking at all the different options. And one of the possibilities may be to go outside the board plans because we've got to such extreme concerns to maybe pre-season to let the public know we're going to do this. And then if we're wrong and the runs come in healthy, we can give it back. We can, whatever. The tools aren't always there to know in time, but that also, you know, to give more liberties, but it also applies to cutting it back in an appropriate manner when you don't have the fish. So I guess that's the frustration that we're hearing here. The main thing, it's a big package, a lot of things. It's not just this year, a new strategy that we tried for the first time with the bigger quarters and so on and so forth. Our stocks are not healthy right now. Coho are gone. The tool that we manage our sockeye are essentially useless in season. Even those tools were scraped together in a rather hurried fashion to come up with any kind of thing. I mean, I have never seen escapement goals put together quite like, and I haven't seen them all over the state, but I've seen them a lot of places, like we did for Susitna. You know, 7 years, got over 30-year period with some aerial, some weir, some towers, all that kind of stuff. So this is a issue that I'm trying to explain to all of you that we think we really jumped on it, but it's a concern that we have up here that we want it to get corrected. When the legislature can help us, you staff take even more forceful action where you can, and it can be argued, certainly only 3% of the kings, I would agree. It's pretty small. But that effort that was done off those coastal streams like the Theodore, Lewis, and Jewett, those things have been closed essentially to sport fishing for years, and they're still not responding. And yet there was a fairly healthy commercial until the board, and maybe we can do something else there. I don't know. But the point is, maybe we got to turn our discussion here. What can we do different this coming year, to the legislator, to the staff, to get away from some of these issues? But I'm rambling on, but the point is, it's a frustration that's not just coho. It's not just sockeye. It's not just king salmon. The stocks up here are not being managed. We don't have the tools. It's more difficult, certainly. It's at the end of the funnel. We know that. But we've got to do something different than we've been doing. And we'd like to hear what might be some of the options that are different rather than... So, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to rattle on, but that is the issue that we hear. It's not a small little...
Summary. No, Larry, and that, it is just kind of what we asked the department, too, if they can address that. What can we do to make this better next year? You know, and some projections, so maybe we'll hear some of that. Ricky, and then I want to maybe make sure we get to some of the sport guys and let them comment on what they've been.
Just a couple things in terms of king salmon. I think long term, broad term, the department has some good data on king salmon abundance, and we are in a cycle of low productivity. I think when things are going gangbusters, if I'm correct, I think Charlie Swan had said there's more than 2 million kings that come back to all the different river systems in Alaska. When you're in low productivity, less than a million. We're in that phase when there's less than a million. And so sometimes we look at everything we do in river, what we do specifically in Cook Inlet, but there's some broader issues too. And I think one of the broader issues I want to point out is in the Gulf of Alaska, there is bycatch in the Gulf of Alaska in the haulet fisheries. And I want to bring to the legislators, there's two different management systems for the state and in the federal fishery. One is in the Bering Sea and the haulet fishery there. It's about a $2 billion fishery. They catch about 50,000 kings. That's the high cap that they have in the Bering Sea. In the Gulf of Alaska, it's about a $20 million fishery. The Bering Sea fishery is 100 times more lucrative than the Gulf of Alaska fishery. Yet in the Gulf of Alaska, we have bycatch rates that are up to 25%. There's not total coverage like there is in the Bering Sea. And I think that's an issue that we need to focus on.
and I believe that there's going to be a research project through the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund, Alaska Sustainable Salmon Fund portion of it, that looks to do genetic analysis of king salmon that are harvested in the Gulf of Alaska fishery. I think that's a critical piece of information that the legislature should be concerned about. One of the reasons why they have tools in the Bering Sea, you think of something 100 times more, but they only catch twice as many king salmon and basically the same style fishery, is because they have catch shares in the Bering Sea and they don't have catch shares in the Gulf of Alaska. I know it's a very controversial issue about putting catch shares in the Gulf, but at some point, when you're in these low abundance levels, maybe there are some tools that we need to have some catch shares. So when the pollock fishery goes out, harvest pollock in the Gulf of Alaska, and you're talking about 80 boats that this would affect, that they have the tools that they can try and minimize to a greater degree king salmon intercept. And I think we're going to have some critical information, hopefully, from genetic testing of king salmon in the coming years here in the Gulf of Alaska. They're catching 25,000 kings. You think, where are those 25,000 kings coming from? Are they coming from Washington, Idaho, Oregon, B.C., Southeast? Are a lot of them coming from Cook Inlet? That's our front door, is the Gulf of Alaska. And when you have a lot of kings being caught in that Gulf fishery, I think sometimes it does impact Cook Inlet. So I'm thankful that the department is going forward with NOAA and NIMS to do an assessment of king salmon bycatch out in the Gulf.
I just, real quick, since we are going to shift over to the sport fish aspect, I just wanted to thank Tracy and Pat for coming up here. I'm sure every time you guys get an invite to come to the Northern District, you probably cringe and try and figure out how you can pass it off to somebody else while you're checking out your flak jackets. We do appreciate what you guys are trying to do. We do have at least some level of understanding of what you face in your management decisions, and I hope that you guys will take away from here the concerns of the Northern District, not necessarily the sometimes heated comments or rhetoric in which some of these concerns are stated. We're not after you guys. We're not out to get you. Commercial fishing needs to be coexisting with the sport fishing industry in Cook Inlet. That's a given. So we need to do everything we can to try and work together for everybody's benefit. And we do appreciate you guys braving the weather and the Northern District and coming here tonight.
Yeah, that's unspoken. You know, they're all professionals, and everybody here is involved. You know, our differences are our strengths, and our likenesses. Making sure we have as many salmon available for everybody available is our common link that holds us together. You know, that combined to make us the best we can. But let's go ahead and get something from the sport fish. I don't know who wants to give Sam. You're the guy here who kind of looks at all our tributaries. The man with the mud on his boots.
Well, we do have a season summary in the back as well. So
yep, and we've got those handed out, and we can get them electronically to anybody who wants them.
I think what you might have, Mark, is just some statement tables too. There's a whole text portion of that as well. So, I don't know if you want me to give you a rundown of the scene or just address some of the questions that come up.
Well, why don't you give us a rundown on the season, and maybe if you've got some comments on some of the questions that have been asked, you know, that you think are pertinent, go ahead and let us know what you think.
Our king salmon season, once the kings hit the fresh water, was very similar to last year. You know, we used the Deshka weir as indicator of run strength. This is only in the sense that very large escapements mean a good return, very low, we could have some problems. We went into the season with a Deshka forecast that told us after marine and sport harvest were accounted for that we were looking at achieving the low end, near the low end of the goal, around 14,000, the goal's 13,000, 28,000. It's very similar to the outlook that we had in 2010. When we started out the season, the catch rates fairly quickly, by about June 8th or so on the Deshka, went up to a pretty good level. That was the first indication to me that was a good sign. That's what we saw in 2010 when we made the goal on the Deshka. Now, we didn't make the goals on most of the other streams, though, so we're still, at that point, you know, very cautious. But we're using the Deshka as one of the spruce indicators. And we go into the season right around June 11th. We come upon the first quartile on the Deshka, and that's when we make our first in-season adjustment to harvest if it was necessary. We got to that point, actually hit on a weekend. We waited the weekend out. We were projecting to meet the escapement goal, and so we were able to hold off on that system. Meanwhile, over on the Little Susitna River, we have the parks, state parks monitoring catch rates and exit booth from anglers that use the Little Susitna public use facility. It's an indicator. It's not the best indicator, but it is an exit survey that gives us some information about what how many fish are harvested and how many users are using the river down there where the majority of the fish are caught. And so when we got into early August, or not August, June, and I'm watching those, you know, plotting them, and we're coming on to, you know, we're getting close to mid-June, where we're getting to the midpoint of the harvest down the Little Sioux. You know, this is when we need to take action. If we're going to take action, we don't want to do it late in June, as we have in the past, a little bit late. So we got to this point. It was tracking very similar to what it was this past year. And in order to get enough fish up on the spawning grounds, we decided it would be necessary to close the Little Sioux and save the remaining 35-40% of those fish. That strategy more or less worked. We did miss the goal, the low end of the goal by a few fish, but it was all said and done. The low end of the goal is 900, and the upper end is 1,800. And then I had also anticipated watching the Yentna River tributaries grow cautiously because we had missed escapement on Lake Creek for 3 years running, and we had missed the Talishulitna for one season in 2010. When we got into the season, the catch rates up there earlier in June were higher than I expected, and we did three staff visits up there to look at the fishery. And then around June 20th or so, I actually took a plane ride up and looked at spawners for fish that were staging at Lower Lake Creek. The numbers looked pretty good, more than I thought I'd see. We decided not to implement any kind of restriction on the Yentna. We did make the goal on Lake Creek at the low end, which was a good thing. We also missed the Talishulitna goal. So when the whole season panned out, out of 17 escapement goals, we made 5. Two of those goals were goals that we made this year that we missed last year on the Talishulitna River and also on the at Lake Creek. All the other systems that have been involved with stock and concern status were missed again for another consecutive year. Overall, west side streams fared better. East side streams fared worse. And that was where care was taken by the board to implement a 50% reduction by closing the fishing on east side streams by during the nighttime, and then also taking off the last weekend, which is a more productive king salmon harvest weekend along Parks Highway streams. And so that, at least with a faced with a run that was probably fairly similar to last year, turned out not working as well as we would have predicted it would have worked on east side streams. Let's see what else. We did make the goal on the Deshka, below average run, but well within the bounds, above 19,000, a little bit above last year's count. And what else can I say about things? Next year we're going to be, you know, again, we have a bet regionally, area-wise, and also with the commercial staff, which is the next step this winter, is to discuss our season approach for next year. The we know that we're going to have to be, take some probably, you know, a hard look, especially along these side streams up to and including Talkeetna. We had some record low counts. We counted Montana Creek one time this year, but we had two observers in the plane, in the helicopter, and both observers counted basically the same number of fish. And that was a record low for Montana Creek. I mean, you could look in the water, and it was a no-brainer there. Also on Clear Creek and Prairie Creek, they've each missed escapements for 2 years, but this last season was a pretty low count. And so for next season, as we spoke about at the Blue Ribbon meeting here last week, given a run similar to what we had this year and the last couple of seasons, we're going to need to be more restrictive to put more spawners on the spawning grounds. And I think that probably the most restrictive regulations might be seen along east side streams, despite that having just have had extra restrictions placed on those fisheries by the Board of Fish. And then, let's see, have any questions about King Salmon?
You know, I just want to say thank you to Sam, too. He's always been a great contact information, I know, for me, and I hope everybody, whether you're a legislator or not, or just a concerned citizen, calls over to the department. You can always talk to Sam, and one of the best sources of information we ever had. He had some big shoes to fill when Rutz left. But, boy, you know, he's worked with Rutz for a long time, Dave Rutz, and he's certainly holding that up. Year before last, I took the opportunity, and it's one of the great things as legislators we get to do, and I spent 14 hours with Sam flying around in a Robinson, and we went from the headwaters to the tailwaters in every tributary of Western, East Cook Inlet, all the tributaries in through there, and looked at all that, watched what they do, how they do it, you know, and spent 14 hours just talking to the guy who gets the mud on his boots there, and it was a great opportunity as a legislator to talk to these guys. Asking what do you need, you know, and again, when we talk about tools, the legislature almost said that the department had decided to take the weir out of the dash kit, and we said, no, you're not. Here's $50,000. You're going to keep it there. You know, the little Sioux weir, we put some money in there to move it down towards the Deshka, you know, where it was prior, so they get better in-season management, and we've asked the department to respond. Instead of just for King, what are we going to do? Bring that over through Silvers, too. It's going to be about an extra $80,000 to do that so that they've got the tools for in-season. But, again, we keep talking about the tools, but yet you guys were removing them and stuff like, you know, it frustrates me, and I'm not going to go down that road again. But I know that these guys are trying hard, and I don't know what to do here. But, again, thanks for what you do. And I kind of had one question here, and I don't know who's the best to respond to this. If there were no commercial harvest in say, Region 2, in Upper Cook Inlet, in the Northern District, what would escapements look like? And obviously, Sockeye, we've been doing okay there, but Sockeye is mandated by the board as a targeted commercial species. The rest of them is sport fisheries. They're, you know, managed for sport. You know, so absent maybe the sockeye, what would our fisheries look like if there hadn't been a commercial fishery on these other species?
Take the 1,800 kings that were harvested commercially and spread them out amongst 500 streams, 200 streams, however many streams there are.
Well, that's a pretty low, it's at 1 to 3% though, so that's kind of minimal. How about like coho?
I don't have to give you the coho numbers, but you asked for kings. I said, what would have it made?
I said, absent sockeye.
It made a big difference on king salmon in streams.
Absent sockeye, because sockeye, you know, is one of those species that we try and get a sport fishery, but it's not really a target of sport fish either. We're lucky to have our lines manned in the
king salmon probably wouldn't have changed.
Yeah.
It's just too we may have made the goal in Little Sioux because we were 13 fish, you know. I gotta believe there'd be 13
I do too.
Little Sioux fish that the commercial guys caught that were bound for little. Well, you'd need 26 because, like Sam reminded me, you only see half of those.
Maybe 50,000.
But he got all 13. But management-wise, we probably wouldn't have changed for king salmon. Coho's really tough to tell.
Plus, in the middle of the season or early on in the season, Fish Creek was looking good. Little Sioux wasn't looking all that great, but the weir, like you mentioned before, is very far upstream. About the time things started to pick up at the Deshka, we had a high water event, and we were flooded out for 7 days. It could have been right at the heart of the run, so it was hard for Coho salmon.
So, again, if there was no commercial fisheries done, again, that's kind of the base of my question. What would our escapements look like? And I guess
I don't know if this gets to your question, Mark, but the Coho run to Upper Cook Inlet looked like it wasn't very good. So if you would have completely closed a commercial fishery, it still wouldn't have been very good because there just weren't all that many Coho to begin with. And it was sort of sporadic. Some places did well, but others did not do so well. I think even in the Kenai, we were kind of hearing some mixed reports. Some days the fishing was very good, and other days the fishing wasn't very good. So there wasn't a consistent picture for Coho salmon from one system to another.
That was for this year. Reflecting back to 2008, it was a fairly weak sockeye run in the inlet. The management plans call for minimal fishing periods for the commercial fleet in the central district, and that's how they would manage. And I don't know how the sport fish guys categorized it, but as a guy sitting in a boat trying to catch cohos, it was the year I remember for coho fishing because there were fish everywhere through the entire season in abundance. And, of course, everybody up here automatically equates the nets are out of the water in the central district, the coho are in the rivers in the northern district. So it does depend on the year as to what the impact of the commercial fishery will be on any given population of fish in the northern district.
Is there, Ricky Geese?
Quick comment to Jen. King Santa, maybe this isn't the appropriate place, maybe we can cover it later, but at some point, can you give an update on how the invasive species work on Alexander Creek?
Sure. I could do that right now.
What was the question, Rick?
It was about the Pike project on Alexander.
Okay.
Northern Pike, this was the first year. We had 2 years of feasibility work leading into this work, and then we did secure some funds from the state legislature to do a suppression program on Alexander Creek side channel sloughs to address boosting that production through eliminating as many pike as we could on that system, and realizing that this would be an annual event that we'd have to do every spring. We got the legislative funding. We used it as a match to apply for Alaska Sustainable Salmon Grant to expand into more of a research program to look at movement within the system and also help us measure our success. So it made the program much larger. We hired one biologist now. We'll be hiring another biologist for the position. 2.5 years is for the startup, and then we plan to continue after that just with the suppression. But in this first year, over 4,000 northern pike were netted and dispatched. We also took stomach contents from a large, probably half of those. We had food items, primarily sculpins, lampreys, leeches, sticklebacks, and other salmon. We looked at stomach contents within and throughout the drainage. We were netting side channel sloughs from the mouth all the way up to the lake, which spans 40 river miles. And so there's over 40 side channel sloughs that we hit. Sucker Creek is the main producing area for king and coho salmon, and it happens to enter about halfway down at river mile 20. All the stomachs in the northern pike that were dissected upstream of Sucker Creek to the lake, where you're getting closer and closer to ground zero for pike, contain no salmonids. And in the northern pike stomachs that were taken from pike downstream of Sucker Creek, they did find some salmonids, but in low numbers. Low numbers of juveniles were found throughout the system. We looked at a relative measure of abundance for salmonids by using fishing minnow traps throughout the system and comparing those to catch per unit effort that we expect to see on the Deshka. Fairly small. You know, they're worth a lot caught, to sum it up. Is there any specific questions about Alexander Creek or just...
Absent Alexander Creek, Sam, is there restrictions on ways and means for us guys, like me and Wes, who grew up in Wisconsin and like to go ice fishing for pike and absent live bait? I mean, is there a restriction on the number of lines that you can put in? Can you use treble hooks?
There's just a restriction on the number of lines, but it's been liberalized across the area. Standard for ice fishing is 2 lines. The board liberalized it to 5 lines. There's a number of pike areas that are now liberalized to 5 lines. That allows people to fish with more lines, but you're still able to monitor your lines, you know, that you have out, so that you minimize the incidental take of non-target fish. And so throughout the Alexander Creek system, you can do that, whether you're in the creek or not.
In this area of the state, locally here, and I mean, we can get further off to Figure Eight and Flathorn, and you know, it's basically all pike in there, and I love fishing them. But some of these other little lakes, Prater Lake, you know, some of these lakes that we're getting more pike into, are they still just 2 lines, or are they at 5?
Most of the lakes that contain nearly only pike, or even sections of streams, which was the board started to do 3 years ago, you can use 5 lines.
Okay.
In stock lakes, we don't use 5 lines.
When a trooper comes up, I'm going to say, Sam Ivey said I could use 5.
I'm saying I'm sticking more than 1
the
rest of my life.
Well, that's the thing.
You can use them now in big lakes, which is sort of a test case for northern pike fishing, because there are obviously non-target species.
And
Nancy Lake, too. It's very careful stipulations. We're just going to... We did it in areas where there's good enforcement presence so that we can kind of see how they work and see if we might be able to expand on that.
Yeah, there's just a lot of these little potholes that aren't in the book, you know, that have pike in them. That, I don't know, they change all over. Questions on sport fishing for the sport fish guys? Andy?
I put something out there. You kind of touched on it. We certainly touched on it on the Blue Ribbon Committee. Maybe you can get some comment from the Department of Fish and Game. I've talked with Pat about it, talked to Sam about it. You know, seems that little percent of weir is one thing that we've identified through ribbon. Something that might be very important in regards to the little percent of the river has been EO closed late into the season the last 3 years for King and has failed to make the escapement hole for Coast end of the last 3 years and is also, well, one of the very most important as far as use in this area by residents of this area. So we're certainly looking at, you know, we'd like to see that here go in for Kings, where it can give you some in-season data on Kings, and if you, you know, even if we did have a restriction or a closure and we had that weir in there, some more fish started showing up either as a result of that closure or just because of timing, we've had a record of we now have enough fish we could provide some opportunity that same season. You know, sometimes that weir would maybe cause you to close the fishery earlier, and then you might make the escape goal instead of being a little bit short or a lot short or whatever. So, I mean, that is something valuable. And then the other thing that Larry talked about at the Blue Ribbon meeting that we've talked about for quite a while is we would like to see a goal associated with the Deshka River weir. Because it's been in there for a long time, and we don't have a goal. Without a goal, you know, we look at it right now, and was the Deshka coho good or bad? Who knows? You know, it was low. That was basically. we expand on the goals we have, so we do have some more goals on non-significant systems? And can we measure them? Something like the Little Susitna Weir that could also, Little Susitna and a Parks Highway Stream that is fairly close, and the department's been managing them in the same fashion, putting on the same type of restrictions late in the season. Maybe Little Sioux being a little bit earlier than those Parks Highway streams with the Weir could give the department an indication of what might be coming on the Parks Highway Stream. All
right.
You want to talk about that, Sam?
I was just going to say that you would be looking at a possibility of a goal on Geshka Koho, as we spoke to, at the Blue Ribbon PD. And then I was also just going to give you an idea of sort of the difference in management on the Little Susitna Koho as far as having the Weir where it is now and where we're bringing it down to River Mile 32.5 where it was for a number of years. And the run timing difference between the two is at least 3 weeks, approaching four, for those fish to move from the lower river to the upper river. So when we're talking about closing the river on August 25th at the first quartile of the run at River Mile 71, which is a mile above the Parks Highway River, and by comparison, that would occur about August 6th on the lower river. So when we took bait out of the fishery on August 6th based on harvest at the exit booth at the Little Sioux Pub, that was, that was the indication we could use then. Had the Weir been there, possibly we would have had a harder restriction in place. We wouldn't have just decided to slow the harvest. We might have done something a little bit more with a harder number. But that's the tools we have to work with now. Moving the Weir where it's at gives us some in-season ability. Moving it downstream improves that by at least 3 weeks.
Rex had a question. For those who don't know, Rex has been my chief of staff for 7 years now, and obviously he's a sport fisherman involved in this too.
I think I know the answer, but when we talk about the numbers of escape from Geshka, and or beavers comes into view. When you talk about beavers, they're typically trapped where they come in under the rivers. What sort of conversation do you have between game folks and FNG on that sort of issue, liberalizing perhaps the trapping? And again, the question we frequently get from folks is, as I'm canoeing down Moose Creek, can I carry that beaver dam? What conversations do you have with game folks?
Well, being a trapper myself, and a target beaver, there is a, simply put, there is a lot of beavers out there in the whole area, especially as you get further to the west side where you have that lower lying, slower gradient areas out there, inundated with beaver. Beaver certainly, can even stop salmon runs in some cases. Fish ascending to spawn in a lake, sockeye runs in that. Okinawa aquaculture is active in taking weirs down. We haven't done it with the sport fish division since threat division. To answer the question about talking with wildlife managers, there are nuisance beaver permits you can get through those guys, but usually that's if it's affecting personal property, things like that. Otherwise, they don't typically get involved, where there's fish issues.
Moose Creek is a well-trafficked canoe and another John boat, and I know in recent years we've heard more people, talk about the obstructions that are causing Moose Creek upper river, especially around the which is exceptionally easy access. And I know I trapped that myself a couple of times this summer, so I can relate to it.
Yeah, a lot of those beaver dams, especially on Moose Creek, blow out with pretty good frequency. It depends a lot on the precipitation when we come into the rainy season in August, and then the spring flows when they start out real high, and sometime in the middle in July and early August, sometimes you'll see damming successful all the way across. And even in those cases, a lot of times you'll see fish that jump them. A lot of that is really depends on the depth of water on the downstream end of the dam. You know, if you have 2 inches of water, then most likely the fish isn't going to get over. But on the Deshka, there typically isn't that big of a gradient. You'll see those kings jumping over and swimming up and still spawning up in the west corner of the street and places like that.
So, I don't know, maybe Hasbrook would be the guy to answer this. Working with nonprofits, you know, I know that we've kind of set a model, or I believe we have, with SFW working on Alexander with some pike eradication. But there's other groups, you know, Rod Arno's here representing Alaska Outdoor Council, 10,000 members across the state. You know, if he was to say, hey, you know, maybe some of our members at ADF&G would like some help assisting with management, working with other nonprofits, how can the department do some outreach, like with organizations who want to help either financially or through labor? Oh, there's a lot of Alaskans who want to make this better, and you need the tools, and you don't have the budget. How do we address that, Jim?
Well, we work with a lot of nonprofits. We work with Kenai River Sport Fishing Association on a number of projects. So it can be done. It has been done. We work with other organizations like the Salmon Partnerships that are here in the valley, and there's a Salmon Partnership down on the Kenai Peninsula and in southwest Alaska. So I haven't really thought about what kind of outreach we can implement, but I certainly, if groups are interested in doing some projects or in helping us in one way or another, we worked with the Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife a couple of years ago, and I think that worked out very well. So they should not be shy in contacting me if they have some ideas, or if they just want to sit down and have a discussion about what our needs are and how can we can work together.
Well, if I was to think of a group of people who want to help out and chip in, sportsmen are always at front, you know, doing that. And I think I read somewhere it's about $2,200 a year. Each sportsman in Alaska is about the average of what we spend, you know, out there trying to do that, individuals, you know, on equipment and stuff like that. But we're always willing to get out there and help the department, I think, more than ever. So I don't know, maybe you might want to be thinking about that. And I know that there's other groups that have approached that are trying to work with you. So just a question that's come up. And we got a few minutes left. And I know this is something that I've asked before. It seems like there should be specific triggers that say, if during your test, you know, your test catch fisheries, your dockside counts, which are, you know, at time management tools, right, by the day, by the hour, by the minute. Do you have triggers that say, if on this date there's this many fish caught, that this is how we manage escapement? I mean, or do you just kind of go through this season after season saying, well, we think we can get this many fish here, and it's, you know, it seems to be a guessing game. But do you have defined triggers that say, here's our dock site off our commercial, here's our test catch fisheries, the tools that you got for in-season management that give you sideboards on how you're going to manage our fisheries? Or not?
Well, this is Tracy, and I might look for Pat to help me out, but I think for commercial fisheries, I wanted to say there's two triggers. There's one for Kasilof, which really doesn't matter to you guys, it's your folks up here. But the one that does is the test fish, or not the test fish, I'm sorry, the run size. Normally, we'll come out with a projection in before the season. And then as the season progresses, we see how we are. If the salmon run is not as we projected, there's a trigger point to reduce fishing. If it's greater than projected, then there's a trigger point to increase.
What are those?
This is the drift leak. These are the tiers that I'm talking about. Most folks here understand that as certainly an issue at every Board of Fish meeting. But in the drift plan, if there are coming up. If there are less than 2.3 million cubic kenite, that affects our drift plan and actually and our hours as well in Eastside Net fishery. But because you folks are mostly interested in the drift fishery, not so much the Eastside Set Net. And I don't know what these restrictions are, but they are the trigger points that we use. And the other one, the middle tier is from 2.3 to 4.6 million fish to the kenite, and that's the tier we're most often in. And then again, over 4.6. The quandary we have is that last year we were projected to be in the middle tier, the 2.3 to 4.6 million fish. And then towards the end of July 22nd or 23rd, we looked at the information that we had in hand, and as Pat mentioned earlier during his talk, realized this is not a 4.6. There are a lot of sockeye, which, again, like you described, kind of threw us in the quandary of how do we manage such a large sockeye run yet address, you know, coal and sockeye issues up there. And so those are the trigger points that we have on the commercial fishery side. But I think you're looking for trigger points when you're closing, you know, if we need to close.
This is Tom. The other trigger points you guys also have, your primary one is the Kenai River sockeye sonar. That really does a lot.
Trigger point. Yeah.
No, it is. So if you're not making your goal, you're going to slow your fishery down. That's a trigger point for you. Much like you also have a trigger point for Destra River. If we are closing the sport fishery in Destra River, it triggers or an action on the commercial fishing. So that's another trigger point. But other than that, we're getting down to it.
Yeah. Bruce?
No, I'm just making hands quick.
Ricky?
Two quick points, just I know you're wrapping up. You asked about nonprofits and working with ADF&G and collaboration on a couple things. Although we're in the Matsu, there's a lot of Matsu folks who come down fishing on the Kenai Peninsula, and I'd like to put something out there for people in the Matsu. About a quarter of the people who fish in the dip net fisheries down on the Kenai River and the Kasilof come from the Matsu. Half are from Anchorage and the other quarter are from the peninsula.
There's one from Big Lake.
Yeah. And one of the things we've been talking about down there is just trying to find some extra revenues. I would like the department and ask that the legislature look at the idea of a $10 sockeye stamp. I know it's kind of off topic right now, but we're at the end throwing some ideas out. It would really help us find some revenues to manage the fishery and the people on the Kenai Peninsula if we get some extra revenues. And we're talking about sport anglers, personal use anglers. We've talked to a lot of people, and if we know that the money's coming back to the peninsula or Fish Creek or Copper River, we figure the legislature can figure out counts and can divvy that money up and bring it back to those areas for management. I think that would be very helpful and a great help. The second idea is we don't talk about infrastructure and access a lot. And I think that's a really important thing in the next 10 years for the legislature, for Fish and Game, DOT, and for DNR to get a grip on and to come up with a stiff program like we do with roads, and we prioritize infrastructure and access projects. So that we have, you've asked a lot what you can do for sport fishing and for recreation. I think having a process, a system in place where we can identify infrastructure and access projects. They're very expensive. They cost millions of dollars to put in public access points or for maintenance. We don't have a process to do it. It took us over 6 years to get a takeout on the Lower Kasilof, and a lot of times it's in the governor's budget or here or there. Difficult to manage that. And the main thing when you come into the finance committees is, how has this been vetted? Why is this here? What's the process? We don't have a clear identified process. And I think that the legislature should take a hard look at how we can get together DOT, DNR, and ADF&G to come up with a coordinated set of access projects for outdoor recreation in the state of Alaska.
I agree with the access, and I think the Matsu Blue Ribbon Committee is on the ball. And the Matsu Borough on that. I'm talking to the borough manager, now registering the name is Matsu Borough as the Stillwater Fishing Capital of Alaska, targeting access. And I know I talked to the borough manager on how we can get more grant money and what money's available for that. In fact, I also talked to our folks over on the federal side Monday morning about how we can get more money for access into those, you know. And we've talked a lot about salmon, but still, you know, our fresh, our still water fisheries are still very important to us economically. That's something from our bro here.
And we've talked a lot about the need for data and more tools. And one of the things that the Blue Ribbon Committee is working on, which Larry has elaborated on, is developing legislative priorities for research. There's a research program coming up. And I think if we have a few minutes, Larry can talk about the work he's been doing that, kind of the timing and how that might tie into what the department's coming forward with, so that we're working towards the same goal.
We're just a pretty casual group here, you know. Folks, if you got something to say or add or chime in or anything that's important, go ahead. Andy?
I'm just talking about the access, something that I'm aware of. I don't know if anybody else is aware of, but, you know, it just makes sense if you think about where we are with the fishing. The fishing effort has gone down significantly. Deschka Landing, I think, I know they did pretty well in the king season because their king season was pretty much uninterrupted. But they came in considerably under what they expected they were going to be to generate new revenue in the coho season. So Sitna Landing and Little Sitna Landing, those in the public use facility, were considerably under from the conversation I had with people that were running those. And we're talking about being more restrictive next year, and I think there's probably possibly going to be less angling effort. I don't know how Talkeetna was, but we're talking about possibly being more restrictive on Talkeetna as well. And I'm not sure how much of that money is funded by the department, but I know some of it comes from Department of Access. And what I've been told on Department of Access funds is they can get reduced with you know, budget reductions that we're doing federally. So those are going to be things that will probably be faced this next year. How do we?
Are you looking at that, Jim? You know, again, with I know you're starting your annual surveys for sport fishing a little bit, sending out some survey work there, and you do creel counts through the system. But is there, are we seeing a, because sport fish is funded, you know, primarily through licenses and stuff by sport fishermen, are you looking at the decline in sport fishing license purchasing and how that affects your budget?
Yeah, we've had a reduction in license sales and a reduction in our budget because of that. We've also seen a reduction in the sport fish restoration of the federal aid funding that we're getting because of a decline in boat sales and gas sales and a decline in the stock market in which those that money gets invested and then the dividends from those investments go into the money that goes back to the state. So we're sort of seeing a double whammy right now. But lately, I think in the last, in 2010 anyway, or excuse me, in 2011 through now, license sales haven't declined relative to 2010 appreciably. So it looks like we've probably hit hopefully anyway, we've hit the bottom and
are planning
on increasing. And Lisa's actually hired a staff member recently that's going to look at angler recruitment and angler retention. So we're mounting a program to actually try to find ways and why are people not buying fishing licenses? How can we recruit anglers to buy fishing licenses? How can we retain people who have purchased sport fishing licenses in the past and no longer do? What are the reasons they aren't and how can we do something
about
that?
Is there a way to try and find out if just people saying a dissatisfaction, hey, there isn't any fish there to catch. Why would I buy a license? You know, I mean, that's what we get that a lot. Is there a way to measure that, you think? And I'm glad you're trying to look at some of that.
I don't doubt that there's a way to measure that. We haven't done that so far, at least in the last couple of years. It looked like, I believe, and Lisa can correct me if I'm wrong, that license sales among resident anglers really didn't decline appreciably. The decline in license sales was largely non-resident license sales, and that's probably largely a function of the economy and somewhat a function of closures that or restrictions that we've implemented here in South Central, somewhat in Southeast, and the whole halibut issue that's out there. It's created a lot of confusion amongst amongst the angling public and among non-resident anglers.
Yeah, I know I was talking to my friend Bill Thomas, Representative Bill Thomas from Haines, a little bit dissatisfied with the department because the two tributaries that are managed by Sport Fish there have not made escapement either. And so it's not south central here. It's southeast. It's not getting their escapement goals either. So I don't know if they know that Sport Fish is kind of getting hit from a lot of different sides. AYK has been doing okay this year, a little bit better than it has. It's got a little more attention. You know, King Salmon and the issues of getting escapement over to Canada and stuff, and a little bit more money spent on that through the legislature on studies. So they're doing a little bit better over in AYK, and I know I've participated in several conference calls in there that they've really expanded the opportunity for people to participate in that. Any other closing comments from the department? What we can see here?
Real simple question. That's probably Tracy might be able to answer to this. We all know that one of our most important management tools up here was our Yetna sonar. It was eliminated 3 years ago because we found it to be inaccurate. And studies were then instituted to see what could be done to bring it back to life. And we've had 3 years now of fish wheel selectivity studies that would help us apportion the sonar count, hopefully. Are we anywhere close to getting the sonar back? Are those 3 years been productive? Are you got more confusion now than ever before? What can you tell us about this real important tool that you have elsewhere that if a manager had it, he might be able to use it, but he don't, so he doesn't do it?
All of the above.
And maybe put in there why you took them out.
Well, I mean, the issue on the sonar and on the Yetna sonar is that it's not the sonar. I mean, we had a Bendix in there, and we're looking at Ditson. Now, Ditson is a much easier, shouldn't say, well, in a sense, it is a little easier tool to use in the fact that you can visually see fish going across and not little blips. But the issue on the Yetna is the assessment of the different kinds of fish going through. And that's the reason it became, we looked at that, and that's one of the reasons that it was not accurate. It wasn't that the counter wasn't working. It was that our fish apportionment wasn't working, which we use a fish wheel on. And for instance, for 2 years, we actually posted that information, and the range was tenfold. I mean, one calculation that we used said there were 100 sockeye a day, and another one said there were 1,000 a day. I mean, that's the range we're looking at. That's the reason we had the discrepancy. Fast forward, I think we've got one more year to look at before we can even come to a conclusion whether it's going to be worth looking at in the future or not. I know Mark will let he may even try something a little different this year, and he's doing whatever he can to try to see if he can find something that works up there for us.
And on that note, I know at 8:30 we had kind of scheduled this for all the folks at the legislative staff, legislative affairs, the people who are off net and they're doing this. This is being recorded and sent around the state too. So there's a lot of people who are behind the scenes, you know, making sure that people are informed here. We want to make sure that they can go home to their families. We kind of told them at 8:30 we could do that. So we'll close this meeting up for that. And if there's a few people who want to kind of hang around and talk and ask individual questions, we'll probably do that for a little bit here before we chase you all out. But a lot of people here that put in some long days, too, and want to go see their families, too. But I certainly thank everybody who participates in these meetings and the information that we get. And if you've got additional questions, you can get them to any of us legislators, you know, or any through you guys or the Blue Ribbon Committee. And I know that you guys work diligently to try and make sure you answer those questions on time as accurately as you can. So thank you for all you do, and we're all professionals, and we're all pulling on a rope. Sometimes it's different braids, but we got to start braiding them ropes together, so we're pulling together. So thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Sam, were you saying that the